I'm Lina Khmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. It is a milestone in the fight against malaria. The World Health Organization has approved the use of the RTSS or Mosquirix malaria vaccine, the first one against the mosquito-borne disease. This is following a pilot program deployed since 2019 in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi, where more than 2 million doses of the vaccine were given to 800,000 children. WHO says every 2 minutes a child dies of malaria and about 400,000 people lose their lives each year due to the mosquito-borne illness. Most of the victims are children under 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. Mosquirix is made by British drug maker GlaxoSmithKline and is 30% effective in preventing malaria and requires 4 doses. Children were inoculated with the world's first approved malaria vaccine in a part of Western Kenya where the disease is prevalent. Zachary Coleman has more.
Hundreds of children in Kenya's malaria-prone western region were inoculated with doses of the world's first approved malaria vaccine on Thursday. Despite her 2-year-old child's screams, mother Phoebe Watende didn't hesitate. She said she'd seen firsthand the ravages of the mosquito-borne illness.
In our family, we have had a lot of malaria-related problems. Some members have turned mad and others we've lost. Especially in our home, even after someone has been treated, they still fall ill from malaria after a few months.
On Thursday, her daughter received her 4th and last dose at Yala Sub-County Hospital. The vaccine, called RTSS, or Mosquirix, was developed by British drug maker GlaxoSmithKline and is the product of 30 years of research to fight one of the deadliest scourges on Earth. Malaria killed 386,000 Africans in 2019. The World Health Organization said Mosquirix should be widely given to African children. Since 2019, 2.3 million doses have been administered to infants in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi in a large-scale pilot program. The vaccine's effectiveness at preventing severe cases of malaria in children is only around 30%, but it is the only approved vaccine. Chris Opati, the clinical officer in Siaya County, Kenya, said the trial is already showing improvements.
We've seen a reduction in the cases of the severe form of malaria, and this can be checked through our reporting systems. The numbers have really gone down.
But it's unclear when the vaccine will be accessible to the many African countries where malaria is endemic, because the cost per dose is not known, and it is not clear how quickly production can be scaled up.
For more perspectives on the RTSS vaccine, or Mosquirix, and its significance in malaria control on the continent, I spoke with Dr. Akpaka Kalu, Regional Advisor for Tropical Diseases with the World Health Organization African Region.
Dr. Akpaka Kalu, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
The World Health Organization approved the RTSS vaccine to prevent against malaria. How much of a game changer is it, and what is the significance of the vaccine in the malaria control landscape?
It is a turning point. For the last 5 years, we've documented stagnation in the reduction of malaria burden in Africa. Stagnation, in fact, between 2000 and 2015, the rate of reduction was like 7, 9 percentage points every 5 years. But in the last 5 years, it was 1 percentage point. We were so alarmed that we launched what we call Rethinking Malaria. What do we do differently to get a different result by 2030? And now this vaccine comes in. It's part of the game changers we are looking forward to. So introducing this vaccine as part of other arsenals against malaria, not as a replacement, is a welcome development. We are happy to support countries to deploy it, including in combination with other interventions.
The vaccine has a 30% efficacy rate, a bit low when it compares to other childhood vaccines. What is your reaction?
Malaria is a very sophisticated organism. This parasite lives in both mosquito and human. And to develop a vaccine, you have to wonder, where do you target the parasite, in the mosquito or in humans? Even within humans, this parasite lives in the blood, lives in the liver. Where do you target this parasite? So it's a complex organism. But we are happy that scientists have been able to catch the parasite in its game. and have developed this RTSS vaccine that can attack the most common parasite in Africa, Plasmodium falciparum in the blood stage, and therefore hopefully prevent many cases and more importantly, prevent 40 out of 100 deaths. Now, some people have argued, oh, it's 40 out of 100. If one of the 100 that will die is your child and the vaccine is the hope, will they approve the vaccine? Of course, you will jump for the vaccine. And that's what you are saying. We have a vaccine that is effective, especially when combined with other interventions like seasonal malaria chemo prevention. It goes up to 70%. We want to deploy this vaccine. At the same time, support innovation, support ongoing work for a second generation of malaria vaccines. Like COVID has taught us, we can deploy 3 vaccines at the same time, 4 vaccines at the same time. So as soon as we have additional vaccines and they are approved, welcome, we will deploy it. We will deploy what is safe and effective. And that's what we are doing with this vaccine.
Mosquirix requires 4 doses. What is the time frame between each dose?
Generally, the first 3 doses are timed along with the DPT doses in Africa. Generally, you know, from the age of 5 months, every month over. And then by the 4th dose at 24 months. In fact, the 3rd dose also is outside the routine immunization system, which is why the piloting was important to see whether the routine immunization system can deliver this vaccine. And surprise, surprise, mothers, caregivers came for the malaria vaccine. In some countries, they came for the vaccine more than they came for other vaccine. In other words, malaria vaccine advertises itself. And that is what we are banking on. That malaria is known. It's a known killer. It's a known member of children and adults. Therefore, if and when it's introduced in countries, to advertise itself, who will go for it? We don't expect any anti-vac activities related to malaria vaccine because mothers know they better prevent malaria.
As you mentioned, the vaccine was rolled out in a pilot program in 3 countries, Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi, for about 2 years. What strategies have shown to be successful in ensuring that parents who live in remote villages adhere to vaccine schedule? Because with 4 doses, it's not always easy to have the commitment or to have the means to commit.
That's true. That is why the piloting is still going on, especially for the 4th dose. Because 2 years, some started at the age of 5 months, some started later in countries. So the pilot continues until it comes to an end to bring information on some of the issues that may impact coverage with the vaccine. Moreover, we know that people in communities will invest anything to protect their children. It's about communication. But the piloting did not adopt any special strategy, just the routine immunization strategy, the routine communication strategy was what was deployed because we wanted to make sure that the routine system can deliver this vaccine. So, but going forward, I believe that introducing malaria vaccines, scaling it up in countries, should have a communication component. And it will not be for malaria vaccine alone. It will be a comprehensive communication component that advocates for vaccination in children, all vaccines.
Will it be introduced as part of routine immunization at some point, do you think?
Certainly to be part of routine immunization. The details are being looked at. For instance, we are looking at malaria had adopted a strategy of tailoring intervention. In other words, don't deploy all your tools in all parts of the country. Look at the prevalence of malaria, look at the burden of malaria, look at the seasonality of transmission, and tailor the best interventions for districts and provinces in that country and in all countries. So looking at that, it means that this vaccine potentially will be looking at how best to maximize it. Moreover, we do have supply situations. But we think that in 2 years' time, there will be enough supply. At this point in time, we're working with partners like, you know, Gavi and others, to look at how to ensure that this vaccine is made available.
And finally, I would like your thoughts on what is happening in Burkina Faso right now. The researchers have found another vaccine that is more than 70% effective in clinical trials, which are still ongoing. How do you see all these research and development in the future of malaria control on the continent?
Any and every effective and safe vaccine in Africa for malaria will be deployed. So the work in Burkina Faso now undergoing phase 3 trial is welcome. When they are ready, they will submit their data set to WHO for review. Again, like we brought together SAGE and Malaria Policy Advisory Group to work together to review evidence and propose adoption or otherwise. We will do that. Again, also there is ongoing work on mRNA malaria vaccine. That is welcome. There are other vaccines in the pipeline. We believe that the way to go is the way COVID vaccines are gone. Multiple vaccines deployed in multiple countries, you know, multiple vaccines deployed in the same country, depending on supply situation. That's the way to go. So any tool, any malaria tool, be it vaccine or any other innovation, is welcome. We will deploy it if it's safe and efficacious.
Dr. Akpakakalu, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Akpakakalu, Regional Advisor for Tropical Diseases with the World Health Organization African Region. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in right here, Mondays through Fridays, at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for an action-packed 30-minute program of African, American, and international sports highlights.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says just 15 African countries, less than a third of the continent's 54 nations, met a global goal of fully vaccinating 10% of their people against COVID-19 by the end of September. Mavis Okere in Juaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The goal was set in May by the World Health Assembly, the world's highest health policy setting body, which says almost 90% of high-income countries met the target. In Africa, Seychelles and Mauritius have fully vaccinated over 60% of their populations, Morocco 48%, and Tunisia, Comoros and Cape Verde over 20%. Botswana, South Africa and Rwanda are about to hit the 15% mark. Most of the African countries that have met the goal have relatively small populations and 40% are small island developing states. Dr. Richard Mahigo, coordinator of the Vaccine Preventable Diseases Department of the WHO Regional Office for Africa, says most have the resources to acquire the vaccine or bilateral deals with the COVAX.
Unfortunately, 70% of African countries have missed this important milestone to protect their most vulnerable, with half of the 52 countries with COVID vaccination program in Africa have inoculated less than 2% of their population. WHO has gathered lessons learned from successful vaccine rollout and is supporting countries with greater challenges and bigger populations to apply them to their own context.
He urged countries to push forward with renewed strength to fully vaccinate 40% of their populations by the end of the year. Mahigo says although monthly vaccine deliveries have increased tenfold since June, the number needs to more than double by the end of the year to reach the target of 40%. He says the COVAX facility is working with donors to identify countries that could absorb large volumes of vaccine.
It is also identifying, with the support indeed of WHO and partners, countries that do not have other means to procure vaccines and will ensure that these countries are in the front of the queue to get enough vaccine to cover their priority populations. In addition to these efforts, we need pledges of doses by wealthier countries to materialize soon.
Dr. Palmer Smith's Lawrence Acting Director of Health Services in the Ministry of Health and Wellness in Botswana credited collaboration with the World Health Organization and other relevant stakeholders who helped cobble together plans for a system. She says the plan conveyed all stakeholders from planning, coordination, and implementation stages. She says the target population for the vaccine rollout program was adults over the age of 18. Laura says Botswana sought to secure and procure COVID-19 vaccines using direct available platforms, noting that the process began as early as May 2020 and included subscribing to global regional vaccine access platforms such as COVAX. She says the country also engaged with vaccine manufacturers directly by signing bilateral agreements.
We have also leveraged on existing diplomatic relationships with different countries to obtain vaccine donations. To date, we have managed to fully vaccinate 22.4% of our target population of 1.5 million, while 29.6% of this target have received first doses.
Lawrence says public vaccination sites have been expanded to include community-based settings to provide equitable access service to all, with plans to use drive-through models as well as shopping malls for easy and convenient access by the public. Africa has to date received 200 million vaccine doses and administered 71%, with 60 million people fully vaccinated, which represent just 4% of the population. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
A group of 2,000 soccer fans were the first to use South Africa's new vaccination certificate to access a match between the national side Bafana Bafana and Ethiopia. However, the certificates have caused uproar, with some citizens accusing the government of trying to force them to get the shots against their will. Experts are also divided on the issue. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
With vaccine hesitancy growing and misinformation around the coronavirus vaccine keeping many from getting the jab in South Africa, the government hopes the vaccination certificates will motivate people to get inoculated. The Department of Health says the certificates will be used to access sports and recreation events, music festivals, and other entertainment, as well as for travel and tourism. This is what Nicholas Crisp, the acting director in the Department of Health, told the media.
If all of those people are vaccinated, there's a reduced risk of transmission in that group. Workplaces, sports centers, stadia, concert halls and so forth, the same might apply to a restaurant, to a proprietor, might decide that they're going to reduce their risk by making sure that all their personnel and all the people who come into their establishment are vaccinated.
The introduction of these certificates has, however, attracted a lot of controversy. Those who have chosen not to vaccinate are accusing the government of not respecting their constitutional rights to decide what gets into their bodies. Sylvester Chima, program head of bio and research ethics and medical law at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, says such a move requires careful implementation to avoid ethical breaches.
In ethics, what we're trying to do is to find a justifiable way of doing the right thing. The problem arises from when we introduce these vaccine passports, how do we make sure that individuals, their rights are not violated? So this creates a moral dilemma in balancing the rights and responsibilities.
Those against vaccination have likened the move to the old apartheid system that restricted the movement of black people by forcing them to carry passes to travel or access white-only areas. Samantha Dow says they feel oppressed and punished for demanding to know more about the vaccines before getting a shot.
I feel like people have been not given enough time to decide what they want, and people's rights are being violated. People don't have a choice and are being forced to take it because of the amenities that people need. So I think they just need have to give people time.
Siyabonga Mthethwa describes it as an infringement of his rights to free movement and association.
Personally, this vaccine thing is, for me, it's absolute nonsense. I'm using it in a manner in which I need a job. So basically, you see, so yeah, it's bad. It's very bad. But yeah, my view on the vaccination thing is still the same. Nothing has changed. It's nonsense. Did not help with anything.
However, advocate Andrew Gaum from the South African Human Rights Commission has told local media there is nothing wrong with creating the certificates.
On a daily basis, rights are limited to protect other rights. In this case, we have the rights to bodily integrity, the right to religion and so on. But there is also the right to a safe and a healthy environment, for example. And all rights can be limited, except most probably for the right to life and human dignity.
South Africa is targeting vaccinating 35 million people by Christmas. However, the program is moving at a snail's pace, with only around 10 million people vaccinated since the program began in April. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The coronavirus pandemic has taken a toll on many people's mental health, especially among vulnerable groups like refugees. In Kenya's urban refugee camps, aid agencies are trying to help people cope with anxiety and depression. Brenda Mulinya reports from Nairobi for World Mental Health Day, which was Sunday.
In one of Nairobi's suburbs, a group of refugee women go through the day's training activity on how to detect and handle mental health-related issues. The training is to deal with the extra load of mental health issues brought on by the global COVID-19 pandemic. Refugees already burdened by the trauma of fleeing their home countries must also face the pandemic's impact on their income and way of life. The United Nations High Commission for Refugees spokesperson Eugene Bayan says the agency has had its hands full dealing with this challenge.
So we witnessed that the counseling per month has significantly increased during the COVID-19 pandemic, so that we added more resources to account to those kind of challenges, so that we bring more therapists and more counselors, so that they can have, in the case that they do the home visit and then the phone counseling, so that refugee can feel that they have access to the mental health issue, and then they can fight with the mental health issue.
Psychologist Albert Chumo, who works with refugee women and children, says the pandemic has not only reopened old trauma cases, but also manifested new mental health concerns.
Some of them have families, they have children, they are withdrawing from family members. At times, some of them would even there's no point of living, so they are hopeless.
60-year-old Esperanza Mukawachina is a Rwandese refugee who's lived in Kenya for the last 20 years. She operates a clothing shop on behalf of close to 40 other refugee women who have felt both the economic and mental ravages of the COVID-19 pandemic. She says the last 16 months have been the toughest of her 20 years of refugee life in Kenya due to the anxiety and uncertainty caused by the pandemic.
Vibaya sana. Hata kuna wakati nafika.
Because of too much stress and anxiety, you could get an illness you weren't expecting. I developed high blood pressure because of worrying too much, she says. Women like Esperanza are being helped to navigate the mental health pitfalls by aid agencies like Refugee Kenya. Demand for the agency's help has been especially high in urban centers. Mildred Kemunto, a programs officer with Refugees, says the agency has had to retailer its program due to the pandemic.
We are doing it on WhatsApp, where one who has a smartphone can access it through the sessions, where we always have one session every month for each member of the groups, where we do different sessions that stress management on different issues that especially that affect our women.
The UNHCR says this approach is working well in the refugee camps in northern Kenya, where counseling services are also offered virtually for those refugees in need. Brenda Mulinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
The pandemic is changing how many of us access healthcare. In the United States and elsewhere, studies show that virtual medical appointments are effective, help patients manage their care, and keep people out of hospitals. More from VOA's Carol Pearson.
When Loveth Medaboba's baby had diarrhea, she had a video chat with a doctor near her home in Abuja, Nigeria. One effect of the pandemic is that it has radically and quickly changed how healthcare providers care for their patients in rich and poor countries alike. Telemedicine is even being used in two remote Himalayan areas of India.
Most of the time of the year, these are cut off from the rest of the world because of the heavy snowfall.
With telemedicine, patients can connect with specialists in outpatient departments or OPDs and even emergency departments at hospitals in major cities.
We have been able to cater to about 3,000 consultations in OPD consultations, and more than 60 tele-emergencies have been stabilized at these two locations.
In the U.S., telemedicine appointments reduced the risk of further illness for some children by 99%, according to a study by the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. The study showed that telemedicine prevented at-risk children from being exposed to COVID-19 and other viruses they might encounter outside their homes. In rural parts of the U.S., people with opioid addictions are often underserved. There are not enough clinics or treatment centers. A University of Maryland study shows telemedicine was as effective as meeting in person at a treatment clinic. Telemedicine has also provided clinicians with insight they didn't have before the pandemic, especially in treating U.S. troops with mental health issues.
One of the benefits I think we've learned that the pandemic has really reinforced is that virtual care or telehealth is an excellent way to engage individuals. And from a rehabilitation perspective, it's so important for providers to be able to see how someone functions in their home or in their community rather than in the clinic or in the hospital.
Additionally, telemedicine has proven to get more men to see a doctor. A survey by Cleveland Clinic showed that men are more comfortable with virtual visits than with face-to-face appointments.
Many of the issues that men develop with age are intimate in nature and might pertain to sexual or urinary dysfunction. So I think that the virtual visit allows them to feel like it's a little bit more of a private conversation.
Virtual visits can stop serious conditions from becoming deadly.
Erectile dysfunction can actually be the first sign of cardiovascular disease. Urinary issues can sometimes be the first sign of diabetes or sleep apnea. So even some of these men's health issues that may be more quality of life related, get them checked out. We can often help you get back to normal function and also make sure that there's not anything more serious going on.
With telemedicine, patients don't have to take as much time off work. It reduces or eliminates the cost of travel, which can be expensive, especially in developing countries where people often travel long distances to a clinic or hospital. Telemedicine helps people see doctors they might not normally have had access to. And finally, telemedicine could improve health worldwide and reduce poverty by saving time and reducing medical costs. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Ahmudu, in Washington with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lenore Moudou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is VOA News via remote.